Somewhere buried deep underneath my beautiful haze of memories of having computers, playing with software, and making wonderful things happen is the trauma of installation. Of an era passing through most of my teens and 20s, when making things work, making them happen if they weren't a simple 1-2-step process, was a multifaceted, constantly spiraling set of problems, shortcuts, issues, and resolutions that my mind, thankfully, found ways to paper over and focus on the end of the project instead of the painful journey to get me there. I could probably go into many different examples, but there's two different projects I was involved with that still ring with hardened memories that are basically accurate that I can talk about. One of them was the project of the rotating BBS, and the other is Usenet. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. It was my teen years and running a bulletin board system on my very own phone line that encouraged me to be very creative and very strange about what would pick up when you dialed me. I had been inspired by a number of Chicago and Minneapolis-based BBSs where you didn't see software respond as it would anywhere else. They would have incredible amounts of customizations and special games and interactions that you just wouldn't find in the rapidly generic-filled bulletin board system landscape. Bulletin board system software is hard, and as more features went from being nice to being required, a lot of the early homemade ones would fall to the wayside, meaning that in general, you would see the same software over and over again. People would go from RBBS to PC board, maybe move from ABBS on the Apple over to Networks or another paid-for commercial program. Folks liked consistency, and it was important to them that their bulletin board systems stay up, stay understandable, and interface with all the different features that these different commercial products or near-commercial products would provide. In the face of that, of course, were a number of oddities, ones made by individuals that were so driven they could still give the commercial products a run for their money. They would be able to hold up as their own islands, as their own consistent places that people would want to interface with, even when they had so many other boards to choose from. In my case, the Works BBS was the end point, I thought, of my dreams from when I was 12 and onward, that one day I would run a BBS. I had been a co-sysop on a couple boards, but in the same way that somebody working on the crew of a movie wants to be the director, or somebody working for a very large corporation hopes to break out and become the leader of their own company, I knew my destiny was to one day be a bulletin board sysop. When that day came, when I put up the Works BBS, I had to deal with the number one question that a sysop asks, which software out there best captures what you want to be. And here's where things got a little odd. I tried a lot of different bulletin board system software programs. What I wanted was Waffle, but Waffle at the time wasn't available for PC. It was an Apple-only board. It was something being run by people I really admired out on the West Coast, people who would become my friends in the decades hence. But before then, people who I looked up to because their software was so much fun and so flexible. But I had to make do with my IBM PC, so I tried RBBS. I tried Opus, I tried Fidonet, and I tried other titles, Lost Time. And so, at the time, when you're setting up a bulletin board, you're being given a very generic, functioning program that will, generally, start up and begin answering the phone. But that's just the start of it. That's like getting a piece of paper that you know can take ink, but not having a marker or any idea what to draw on it. You have to start customizing your board. You have to give it a name, perhaps the most important thing that will guarantee you stand out on the lists. Then you have to come up with, what are your subboards? What are you going to have for messages? What's your name going to be? What are you going to offer? And, perhaps most importantly, are you going to connect to Fidonet? Fidonet, by the mid-80s, had long ago burst from being one or two kinds of software packages to being a module on many others. But to join Fidonet was, at the time, especially if you're a teenager, weirdly complicated, almost bizarre, how you would become a node and apply to a different hub and ask for permission and then prove you could toss mail and then run your commands, get accepted, and then join the network. When you were doing the actual intricacies of joining Fidonet, it's a miracle it held together as well as it did throughout its peak years. I mean, it's perfectly understandable when it's just a few dozen boards every year. That's plenty of time on that initial configuration period. But when it was hundreds, thousands a year joining up, it's a true and honest miracle, looking back. I actually went a little further for a while. In my 16 and 17-year-old hubris, I thought it would be an amazing idea to have my bulletin board system rotate software. This turns out to be incredibly complicated. In other words, I tried to hack a system where the bulletin board system, if nobody was on it, would occasionally, randomly, change software. The software would literally take itself down and be replaced by other software. I was going to have three different boards with three different characters, all called the works, that would leave you wondering each time you called which one was going to pick up. There's no amount of 50-something-year-old Jason looking back at teenage Jason thinking, man, he was on to something. He wasn't on to something. It was just that excitement about being on a computer bulletin board, of running it and not wanting to settle for just one piece of software answering the phone. On a pure user basis, from the point of view of the audience of people, this was a dumb idea. This was extraordinarily dumb, and it doesn't matter what hacks I came up with. At one point, I was thinking about using a literal power timer that at 2 o'clock in the morning would literally power off and power the machine back on, when it would then look at a counter written to a file, increment it, and put up a different board. Looking back, if I had really gone ahead with that, I probably would have done it by the day, so that every day at 3 in the morning, it would become a new bulletin board, and it would rotate through those day by day. But then you're getting back to the original question. Why even do that? Isn't it hard enough to just keep a board going, to keep your users happy, to cleave away, to clip away anybody being troublesome or problematic, and then going in with your own messages and making sure that there's something to do? Isn't that enough? By the time I'm running a bulletin board system, I don't have anything to escape from. Compared to my early teenage years, my later teenage years were wonderful. I had a loving place to live. I had a school with many friends. I had made real, honest connections to real human beings out in the world. We did things. We were going to movies together, going to events together, attending concerts, having a beautiful life. I had no reason to descend into an inconceivably stupid hat trick of software. So, luckily, After about 2 weeks of tinkering, 2 weeks of messing around with batch scripts and randomization and power cables and everything else and power switches, I just put a board up. As it was, I put up a board I'd written myself. It was called FerretBBS. I don't believe there's any copy of the source code available, but it was my own custom version of the WaffleBBS. It was a lot of fun to write. The fact that it held together for over 2 years while a 16 and 17-year-old maintained it still makes me feel like I was a little bit better at computers in my teens than I am now. After I went to college, after I became a temp, after I became a sysadmin, there were multiple times that I installed Usenet. Usenet, in its heyday, was absolutely incredible in terms of the amount of material going through. And when you set up a Usenet node, you had two things on your side: pretty good documentation and near instant indication things were working or they weren't. You'd set up a node and you would find a news provider willing to give you some level of news groups. Now, people who didn't live through the Usenet peak period may not know that there were all sorts of different news groups, ranging from generic to specialized to untoward to binary passing, and each of those had their ups and downs and weirdness. And at the time, what you would do is you would set up your own Usenet node, try to find some sort of provider of news, either paying or free, and then you would let your machine run. What was interesting at the time was that it wasn't 100% instantaneous. The news provider would definitely double and triple check that everything was working before it started to give you the data. And oh, did the data come. The news group's information, the messages, the mass of data going onto your drive. If you had set things up properly, it was all no big deal. But if you didn't, you'd run out of space almost immediately. Usenet had retention rules, rules for how long you would hold messages. And maybe you would keep a few weeks, maybe you would keep a few days. Maybe you would tune it by individual subgroups, because some of them would go through so much data, you wouldn't want more than 24 hours to go by. Others, you could have years going back because the conversations were slow, deliberate, and valuable. You functioned, in other words, as a bit of an arbiter, as a bit of a sage looking at these news groups, trying to do the best by your readers. What's nice about Usenet, what still is nice about Usenet, is how none of you sages, none of you powerful wizards controlling nodes, truly have much of a say over what's going to happen. In a feature that I think gets forgotten in many quarters, there was a way to cancel messages. You could issue a cancel request and tell people to take things down because it was illegal, because it was profane, problematic, all of the usual reasons for deleting a message. But following those cancels, well, that was absolutely optional. In fact, at the time, there was a creature, a being, out on Usenet called the Cancel Moose. And the Cancel Moose did all manner of trying to keep Usenet functional by issuing cancel messages all of the time. When I did a panel about Usenet at RaffleCon, I was able to get a number of figures from the days of Usenet. And the Cancel Moose and Kaibo were two of their heroes that I just couldn't get. Kaibo never responded, which is ironic because Kaibo was famous for responding. And the Cancel Moose, well, I'll have to say that the Cancel Moose said no. Joel Furr and Brad Templeton and even Cantor of Cantor and Siegel, the famous first spammers of Usenet. We talked about the old days, the ups and downs, the events, and there was a great moment where it turned out that one of my panel members had actually threatened to sue the other during the heyday and they decided to have it out right there. But that one thing we didn't discuss during that time was the configuration. Configuration, like trauma, like bad vibes, like a lot of the negativity in the world, gets forgotten. Ultimately, what we remember are when things flowed, good and bad, breathtaking and despicable, joyous and fearful. We remember the connections we make, and perhaps in what is one of the greatest mercies, we don't remember how hard it was to make that connection happen. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, Martin, Symbionce, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. And now, having told you this tale, I call to my brain to completely forget all that time that I spent configuring things. Thanks, brain.